Welcome to a very special episode.
Oh yeah.
Of 90s Court. Hello.
Hey.
This is episode 69 of 90s Court. I'm one of your hosts, Lisa.
Nice. And this is I'm Andy.
And this is 90s Court. And like I said, very special episode. I had to bring it in right. I hope that sounded really confusing to people as it was coming out of the intro music there. If you've never listened to 90s Court before, what an interesting episode to have jumped in on. What an interesting one. We take two things from the 90s that are popular, either movies, music, video games, pop culture, food, whatever, and we put them up against each other in a debate format at the latter part of the show. But the first part of the show, Andy and I like to take two things that are not super popular from the 90s and then just talk about them a bit. Something just that, like, maybe wouldn't get a court case.
Oh my gosh, look at this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
I'll tell you what, sometimes to people who maybe this maybe is their first episode or maybe their second episode or third episode, I'll tell you what, I would venture to say that some of our kiddiest episodes can be just as inappropriate if you consider, like, last week.
Yes.
I think we said more cuss words in one about fucking kid shows than any other show episode in recent memory.
I annihilated Wishbone. That in and of itself gets us like a graphic rating. Like, that got us explicit, sure. Even if I cussed not at all. That's
right.
What got us thrown under the
like,
bus.
Wow, you hurt that dog's feelings. That was fictional, but also beloved by children everywhere.
Absolutely. And I do it again too. Sorry, Preston. I'm not sorry.
I do love the showdown of his sadness. Anyways, that's a weird thing to say. Love you, Preston.
Love you, Preston.
All right. But speaking of Preston and other people that we love, I wanted to give a few Patreon shout-outs to get us back here in line. So to a couple of them here, we've got our bailiffs at the $5 level. We've got Jason. Thank you so much. You're a rock star. We love having you on here. Jake, dude, I'm not going to say anything out loud because I don't want to give any spoilers, but I'm so excited. You are a rock star, and thank you. David, always appreciate your commentary. It's always very welcome and delightful. Nate, I haven't heard from you in a while. I'm sure now that I said this, you'll probably text me about it the second you hear this in the episode. So I look forward to hearing from you on that. Tim, we talk pretty much every day. I love you, buddy. You're good. And Preston, as we just mentioned, we love you, even if we did completely destroy Wishbone. And really, honestly, I wasn't super nice to Magic School Bus either, if we're being completely honest.
I'm surprised Magic School Bus didn't get as much love as it should have. But we'll talk about that later. But
it's one of those things that I'm like, I understand, and I know when I was a kid, it was probably amazing. It's just it's more so like, this is me watching as an adult, okay? This is not me. I am not the target audience for this. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not learning anything because I know all this shit because I'm just so smart.
True.
I'm so wicked smart. So anyways, as Lisa mentioned, we do some things on this episode. So we're going to get you started out with maybe some layups, some less kinky shit early on before we get into the to the down and dirty.
Okay.
What?
Okay. I wasn't sure if you kept with the theme for your thing.
No, I don't know if you did or not, but I thought about it, and then I ended up passing on it, but I'm glad to hear that yours is great.
It's not that it's great. It's just I'm just keeping on theme, just trying to make sure everyone feels very uncomfortable and is not able to listen to this with their children around.
No, perfect. And I will tell you what, my thing that I'm going to be covering here first could possibly be one of the more not sexy things imaginable. So here's the crazy thing. I'm going to mention this, and once I say it, you're going to, like, if it turns out that we talked about this recently, I apologize. I know it wasn't one of our things or our court cases, obviously, but somebody brought this up recently, and that's not the reason I brought it up for the show, but I thought of it, and I was like, yes, I want to do this. And then I was like, wait, somebody mentioned that to me. I don't know where. If you were the one who mentioned this to me, message me and say, hey, it was me that one time when I did that thing. And I'll say, hey, you're right. So before we get started, I just wanted to play you a little commercial for a wonderful product that came around in 1998 that revolutionized the game and still revolutionizes the game.
Okay.
So here we go.
Remember the simple pleasures of being a kid? They're back. Now you can eat like a kid again when all you can cared about was taste. Introducing new Lay's Wow Potato Chips. They taste just as good as regular Lay's. And because they're made with Olean, they're half the calories and 100% fat-free.
Dad, how are we going to get home?
You know, son...
Fucking relax.
What, just shut the fuck up,
that was the essence
kid.
Of what he said was, hey, kid, why don't you shut the fuck up?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I'd like to bring to you, for consideration of the Midnight Society, Wow Potato Chips, which were a version basically where they just, let's put it this way. So there's classic Lay's, Nacho Cheese Doritos, and Ruffles were all impacted and had the subtitle of Wow. Now,
okay.
What was the appeal of Wow, first off?
Okay.
So as it was kind of mentioned here on this thing, is that they had half the calories of normal chips.
Important.
And zero fat, which is, I mean, think about it. Is that unreal to have, like, all of a sudden you're like, wow, I can just eat stuff that actually tastes pretty good. I will say it didn't taste quite like potato chips normally, but, like, with what you're getting out of it, it was pretty dope. They used what's called Olestra, which was a soybean product with some sort of oil. And, of course, they advertised also the fact, like, homegrown right here in the USA, Olestra, soybean oil.
Okay.
And holy shit, Lay's did it. They made the ultimate snack for all of us to enjoy and love and would always be and still is. And that's why we still eat these potato chips, right?
Do we? Do we?
Lisa, if I were to say, because you haven't reacted at all to this, so I want to ask you, if I were to say Wow Chips to you, what is the first thought that comes to your mind?
Leaky anus.
Thank you so much. That is right. The Miracle Chip had some slight hiccups.
Yes, I definitely remember GI trouble from this.
I very much appreciate you not saying anything during that, because like I literally had the line of me asking you that in my notes. So
yeah, I was waiting. I was waiting for it. Waiting for it. It's good.
So, the Miracle Chip, as I mentioned, had some slight hiccups, and then it caused the following: abdominal cramping, diarrhea.
Natural.
And fecal incontinence, which for those of you who are not chip wizards, that means anal leakage, as Lisa stated.
Yeah, leaky anus. Yeah.
And now, like, how much of that are we talking? Like, is this something where, like, it's like, you know, in the drug commercials where they say, like, all these, like, really weird side effects that, like, happen for, like, select people and everything like that are pretty dire? No,
yeah.
This is just the norm. Like, if you don't get these things, it's actually unusual. And yet... they sold 400 million of these motherfuckers in 1998, which is unbelievable.
Well, I can understand probably why, because people are like, I want a lower fat alternative to this chip, and I'm actually losing weight because I can't keep anything inside my system because I can't stop shitting.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a laxative, or if it's just only the chips are the stuff that slide right through you.
I couldn't tell you. This is awful.
The poop all comes out poop. So yeah, so this is still rated. They called the shit poop.
Wow.
Basically, so for just the cost of every pair of pants you own, you can be slashing calories left and right.
Yeah.
Have to be around other humans. Good news, you will always smell like shit, and no one will ever like you, especially if you're a kid who goes to school. Like, man. Man, you cannot be giving your... And that's the thing. I bet parents were giving this shit to their kids in their fucking lunches.
Like, we're going to go on a diet this week, Sandy. We're all doing Wow Chips. Well,
Sandy, already has some body issues because she doesn't feel good about herself. Now she's shitting in math class.
It's like, awesome.
It's just awful. Oh. She has to go to the nurse's office for that.
Oh, geez. Like, you thought a piss your pants... encounter in school was bad. That's next level.
Piss your pants. Next it's level. Like just splash some water and just like give it some time and it's done. You shit your pants. You're those underpants and pants are gone, and probably your socks and shoes too. Just everything is ruined.
Yes.
So as I mentioned, they slung about $400 million in product the first year. 1999. They didn't say the exact numbers, but evidently they still were crushing it in 99.
Wow.
By the year 2000. They were forced to add a warning about the side effects on the bag. So those things that I just said earlier about abdominal cramping, diarrhea, and fecal incontinence, that was now on the bag.
You're joking.
No.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, needless to say, like when it slipped down to devastatingly still $200 million that year, Lay's finally was like, hey, guys, you know what? We're good. And the WoW, so basically this was a combination. WoW was a company, and Lay's just basically was like, hey, we're going to use your product on our chips or whatever. Lay's like, you know what? I think we'll just stick to making people fatter, and we're good with that.
Yeah.
We're going to get sued for all these pants that people have lost if we don't stop this.
So many chinos just lost.
Oh,
lost
sure.
to WoW chips.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So, finding whole new ways to use your JNCO jeans. Just all those extra pockets. Just, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with the poop stuff. I promise.
Full of Duke. I'm not.
Full of Duke.
I'm not.
So WoW Company then decided to start their own company, and that's where World of Warcraft came from.
What
hmm?
Did you just say to me?
Oh, sorry. I was searching WoW earlier, WOW, and so World of Warcraft stuff coming up. And
oh,
so
I thought you were legitimately saying that's what was happening.
I'm good at saying things with a straight face, but no,
that was good. Because World of Warcraft is so foreign to me, I was totally just like, yeah, that's
you don't know enough. Like,
chips.
I mean, it could.
Because wasn't the South Park episode where Cartman like shit himself? Wasn't
oh my
that
god,
basic?
I didn't even think about that. Yes, that the World of Warcraft episode, he definitely shit in a bucket.
See,
frequently.
Look at this. For all you conspiracy theorists out there, why don't you suck that one up a little bit?
Man, I love the crazy. Let's get some Charlie Thread memes up here with
so
his
good.
Murder wall. They changed their name to renamed themselves Light, and I don't know if you heard of the brand name Light.
I feel like I saw the like I just looked it up. I saw the bag. I feel like I've bought those, but I don't recall
the WoW.
I mean, well, the Lay's Light.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those. So the Light. I don't know. I don't know why.
You can't. This is shit that you cannot fake. If you're trying to be like, I'm eating healthy potato chips, you're not. None of that is. Just if you want to go full, like go with the old Lester ones that like take out half your intestines, because that's the only way you're going to quote unquote lose any weight on a diet with potato chips.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so evidently the name WoW with an exclamation point was fitting.
Well, I mean, how many times have I said WoW under my breath? Yeah.
People were blown away by just how many pants they lost. And that's all I have. That's my thing.
That's so much, Andy. Damn
like
it.
Like I said, that's probably the least sexy thing I could think of.
Well, I mean, to you, that's someone's thing. That's
oh,
someone's
God,
thing
that's somebody's
for sure.
Something. Damn it.
It's everything someone's something. Man, there was also some kind of weight loss shake in the early to mid 2000s that had the same effect on people. I wanted to say it started with an A or something like that, but it was pretty commonplace to be like, yeah, you're just going to have a leaky butt if you eat this. And it's like, guys, look, just eat food. And if you want to eat full fat food, just eat the full fat food. Just go on walks. Fine.
It's good to know
shit yourself.
That they do have the modern day equivalent of that, of course, with the, I believe... Gosh, what was that? The thing they had the review of that guy who ate like sugar-free Haribo gummy bears or whatever.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, people have shared that with me multiple times, and it's still hilarious every time they do. It's just this huge review of the product on Amazon that this guy wrote. It is outstanding, the verbiage and everything he uses to describe how much he shit because
Google that
of
later.
These things. So, anyways. Moving
to,
on.
It's moving on. Well, listen, you took it to a different place, but I'm going to keep with the sexy theme of this week's episode. I figured I'd go all in. Hachimachi number one, Andy. Are you keeping count?
I told Lisa before this, I'm like, I'm looking at a minimum 5 Hachimachis this episode.
Probably, because the court case is a saucy. So what I'm going with this week is a very special song. Let's see. This song dropped March 2nd, 1991. I was literally 5 years old.
TikTok and you don't stop.
This is where the origins of TikTok came from. Did you know that?
No, it's not.
It's not. That song is, of course, Color Me Bad's I Want to Sex You Up.
Oh, God. This is Lisa. This is fucking Mary, her, like, jam.
This is Mary's jam?
Yeah, she loves this shit, too.
Well, Mary, this is for you if you're listening in the middle of making delicious Schitt's Creek cookies. Mm-hmm. If you're in Illinois, get some cookies. This is one of those super early in the decade earworms of a song that was like, that was always around, or at least it was in my household. And that gets me a pretty big concerned face that I was 5 and this song dropped, and we were like, I want to sex you up.
I want to sex you up.
Exactly. Thank you. That's exactly how I sang. Very high-pitched voice for a little wee lady.
I do remember now, I think it was a very early episode that you, like, we were talking about songs that were inappropriate at the time, and you did reference this song at that point.
I did reference it, but I've not given it the attention that it deserved. So that's what we're doing this week. So we're coming, we're circling back. So again, I'm kind of fretting at the fact that this dropped when I was five and I listened to it and sang it. However, I realize now that I have a 6-year-old and 5-year-old and 2-year-old around me constantly, and I'm just listening to Frank Ocean and like Migos and like anything nonstop. So I'm not doing any better. In fact, I'm doing much worse, I'm pretty sure. So this track is made by the group Color Me Bad, like I said, and that's with two D's, bad, just because, you know, why not? It's the 90s. It was number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 for 4 weeks.
What?
4 weeks.
What was number one?
I don't remember. You look that up real quick because I only have one. I'm doing the microphone
what
now.
What was the year? 1991?
1991, okay. Yeah, so, and it was also featured on the soundtrack for the film New Jack City, which I never heard of in my life. I had to look it up. It had like Wesley Snipes, and I want to say it was Wesley Snipes. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I hope I'm right. I hope my memory's serving me right. It's probably not. So apparently the group was presented this song by producer Dr. Freeze in hopes they could find something that was similar to Belle Biv DeVoe's Do Me, which I did not know until I listened to before the show. Listen, music is pretty sexy now. The 90s had its like taste of sexy music too, with TLC's Creep. That song rules. TLC's Creep rules, okay? Salt and Peppa's Let's Talk About Sex. And Right Said Fred's I'm Too Sexy. What are we gonna cover that?
I don't know. I do have the answers to the
full might. Yeah, what was it? What was number
the things?
One?
So I've got a few things here I want to mention. So obviously number one, Bryan Adams.
Of
Everything
course.
I do.
Oh, that song ruled.
Do it for you. Yes. Gonna Make You Sweat, Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory.
Son of a bitch.
Very good. Rush Rush by Paula Abdul on Medicine.
Oh, that song was so good. I've been waiting to talk about that one.
My number one thing I want to mention, of course, is that number 7, More Than Words by Extreme, which still love that jam.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
That's all right.
It's a very
That's
good
all right.
song.
I still love Rush Rush. So
yeah.
I like Paula Abdul when she was a singer and not as a judge for every reality TV show.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the track. This track is personal. Like I said, we grew up hearing this on a cassette tape. I distinctly remember singing it in the kitchen with my sister and my mom. And like, let's just review the lyrics for a little bit, okay? 5-year-old Lisa, ready? The bridge is as follows. Girl, you make me feel real good. We can do it till we both wake up. I'm sorry, hold on. Were we asleep? Are we sure? Like,
I was certainly
asleep.
We do it
till we both wake up. We were asleep. I don't think this is what sex you up. Maybe something different than you thought. Girl, you know I'm hooked on you, and this is what I'll do. And the chorus is, I want to sex you up all night. You make me feel real good. I want to rub you down. I want to sex you up. Now listen, new year, new you. Mm-hmm. If these aren't the lines that you're using in your opening message to someone on Tinder, go back to 2020.
Oh, I thought that was
nothing.
Still part of the song. And I was like, wait, Tinder?
No, no, you just need to learn that in 2021, you're using I want to sex you up as your opening Tinder line for sure.
Sure.
Or whatever you're on. Only Farmers.
Yes, Only Farmers.
Only Farmers.
That's the name of it.
Yeah. Only Farmers.
It's farmersonly.com.
Farmersonly.com. God. Wait, what's the farm? It's not, I'm thinking OnlyFans. That's not, oh, but Farmers.
Farmersonly.com is one thing. That is a dating
only.
Site exclusively for
farmers.
For farmers, which is the most insane small demographic for a
It's
a
very
dating site.
Niche.
But apparently
so niche.
They're doing well. The song is, you don't have to be lonely. At farmersonly.com.
There's a song for this.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I guess, so you must have cable.
Yeah, I don't remember when, like, it's been years since I've heard it, but it was definitely, like, you know, a few years back, like, I would hear it maybe, like, once every couple months or something like that.
That's fantastic. I wish I would be exposed to a Farmers Only dating website. Damn it, I want to get on one. So
you're welcome.
So another verse from the song goes, let me take off all your clothes. disconnect the phone so nobody knows. Okay, pause, buddy. That's some serial killer shit right there. Mm. We're not doing that. You leave my phone alone. That's my, that set, that phone in 1991 is the plastic red lips phone. And if you disconnect it, I'll kill you. I'll kill you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And let me light a candle so that we can make it better. Making love until we drown. Okay. What? Where's, making love what, until we drown. Where are
liquid?
We?
Yeah. Where's the, how is
don't
the drowning?
Don't ask that.
Okay.
Don't ask that.
That's not, listen, but, Lisa. You know we were all thinking it. Like, there's not.
But what's the setting here, Color Me Bad? Where are we? You've got a candle and we're drowning? What is happening? Cool off, guys. Now, the video is another thing entirely because each of the four members of the group are like dancing around and engaging with women in their own situations, like in an office, in an elevator, in a storage room or something like that. And like, not to mention they're doing the coolest 90s dances, like some big ass running man style move. And like, I just, the song is so interesting because it had to have been pretty controversial at the time. 91, everyone was still like clutching their pearls.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then we've got this, and it's just like, excuse me? But don't worry, in 2020, we'll have wet-ass pussy, and things will be, like,
they
null and void.
They knew. They're like, listen, it's only going to be, like, another, like, wow, did I say 19? 29 years before everything's... this is totally blasé.
This is... The closer we get to the beginning of the 90s, the more upset I get, because it seems like a totally different era. And it just like when you have to start saying that something's 30 years old, like that song is 30 years old.
And I just said 29 years and I remembered it's 2021. So it's 30 years ago.
It's when did I say it came out? March 2nd. So it's almost 30 years old. I hate myself. I hate this. I hate this thing. I hate this thing that we're doing.
I'm going to start eating some more Olean chips so I can live longer.
So I can live. I don't know if that's what's going to happen. But however I feel about this song, it's unimportant because it got nominated for fucking Grammy, for two Grammys. It got them nominated for like best new artist and best like R&B track. It did not win.
Sure.
But it got them nominated. And that to me is important.
You know who didn't get nominated for a Grammy? Me. So
me.
Like,
I know.
Touché.
I've never been. Well, I mean, talk about yourself. You don't know my Grammy history.
That's true. I shouldn't say that. So, yeah. But I mean, you know what's weird about to me about that is that, like that's the expression I'm gonna fuck you up is like such a common thing, and yet they turned it to mean like, no, I'm literally going to have sex with you, up, like a lot of sex.
Yeah, and this isn't meant to be any kind of like backhanded, you know, transgressive. I don't know if that's the word I'm trying to say, but like, there's the first verse is something like, "I want you to make love to me, girl," or something like that. It's just like that seems backwards verbiage wise for the I don't know, it just seems like you're asking her to make love to you. It seems like backwards. I don't know.
Can I
it
tell you something?
Yes.
I this entire time I thought that a woman was singing this song. I didn't.
They're all men.
Okay. I didn't. I have not never actually. I don't know if I've heard this song.
Yeah.
Except for you anymore? And Mary singing it.
Damn it! I just closed the tab, dumbass. Because I've been dying for you, girl, and. Because I've been dying for you, girl, and make love to me. It's just, I mean, it's sweet. Sweet. It just seems backwards. I guess given in 2021, 2020, I don't know. I don't even know anymore. People just wanted to get down. People were not yet getting jiggy with it.
No. They just were like, hey, excuse me, girl, could we please get down?
I want to intercourse with you. Yeah.
That's my thing. I'd like to have some sex.
Please, in parentheses, please. So that's my thing. I really want to never talk about Color Me Bad ever again after this. I did it.
You did it, though.
Mark it off my list.
We needed to rip that bandaid off, and here we are on episode 69.
Let us never revisit this ever again. But nice. So listen, we need to take a break. Cool off.
Just getting all hot and bothered over here.
Yeah, come ooh back, because we have to prepare. I might have to get a little glass of wine for the court case.
Okay.
Whoa. So anyway, we'll be back. Take a break. We're going to listen to a couple ads. We'll be back after this with poll results
sleep
from last
phones.
Week. Sleep phones. Get some sleep phones. Just
bye.
Do it. Bye.
Hey, 90s Court listeners, Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy. Or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day. Or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. There's hope for you, and it comes in the form of sleep phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90scourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90scourt. Sweet dreams.
Welcome back to Sexy 90s Court. I'm Andy.
I'm Lisa.
I don't know why we're introducing ourselves again. We're still here. It's still
we're
sexy.
We're still here. Well, we took like about a minute and 40 second break, and as if we've recovered at all.
No, but... I know. Like, I just had to like go splash some cold water in my face because things were just getting just a little bit too sexy in here, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, all that leaky butt talk, really.
Leaky butts, yeah. and songs that weren't quite as good as What's-His-Face.
I don't remember
what the guy I said earlier was. Anyway, hey, we're back. That means it's time for reading some poll results from last week's episode, and then, you know, maybe we'll do something else afterwards.
Oh my gosh. All right, so poll results are on me. I see that even though it's highlighted in bright red for me. Listen, Magic School Bus versus Wishbone. Tough week. I'm not gonna lie. I knew Magic School Bus was gonna whoop Wishbone's little hairy ass all over the countryside, and that's exactly what happened by a landslide. Well, maybe not landslide. It's pretty much a landslide. Twitter, 54-46 in favor of Magic School Bus. Instagram, 64-36, Magic School Bus, and finally Facebook, 78.3% to 21.7% Magic School Bus.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go ahead and say Miss Frizzle won.
Yeah, I think the thing is that, like, with Facebook in particular, like, pretty much everybody that's voting on there is very like-minded to each of us. Like, so
yes.
So that's why they kind of tend to blow one thing out over the other a lot of the times. But yeah, sorry to the Caillou of the 90s, fucking Wishbone. Did you hear that Caillou got canceled recently?
I did.
Okay. I didn't know if your kids ever watched that or not, but everything I've heard about it makes it sound like that show is the fucking worst. Like, parents hate it.
I've tempered the shit I let my kids watch. Like, everyone's like, ooh, Cocomelon. It's like, just don't turn it on. Just don't turn on Cocomelon. If it sucks that bad, don't turn it on. Caillou, it sucks. Don't turn it on.
Yeah.
But you know what dawned on me the other day?
Uh-huh.
That the cycle of, like, my parents letting me watch Ren and Stimpy and it being like a little too aggressive for my age at the time, I'm continuing the cycle by allowing my kids to watch Adventure Time.
That's the funny, like, Adventure Time feels like it's almost an adult cartoon, but not quite. Like, it's kind of like on the hair where it's like, it's still kiddie enough, but not quite. And then what's the other, God, there's another one. Never mind. I won't get in.
Rick and Morty. We can't.
Well, no, Rick and Morty. That's purely adult. No,
I can't even watch it. There was one episode I watched. I was like, that's a wrap on me. I can't come back after this. Like, that was too far.
I waited a very long time and resisted for a long time before I finally watched all of it. I think it's a good show, but
it is a good
anyways,
show.
Anyways, something just came across my desk and it's really sexy. Can anyone tell that I'm, like, super into this whole concept because, like, I love talking about sexy things because I'm such a sexy guy?
I'm very into sexy things. Very into sexy. You have your own personal negligee on for this episode.
I have my spiritual negligee on.
Your spiritual negligee.
God is protecting me from this episode.
someone needs to protect us from this episode. Let's just go ahead and say, okay, real quick. The episode, the court case now, from here on out, is Showgirls versus Striptease. Now, I don't know about Striptease.
Yeah, I'm covering sure Showgirls. I sure as fuck don't know anything about Showgirls.
That's okay. That being said, I can say that from this point on, if there are children around, they shouldn't have been here to begin with, but if they're around, it's probably not okay for them to be around from this point on. You're the parent, you make the call.
We've
but Showgirls
literally
takes
it been there. Talking about people shitting their pants and people sexing you up. Like, I don't know how the kids got through to this point. And somehow this is going to be worse than what we've already said.
But someone's probably yelled at me like, you're not my real dad, Lisa. You know what? I'm not. If you want your kids to hear about Showgirls, let's do it. You can watch it online. You can rent it. Just do your thing, man. But let's this week is Showgirls versus Striptease.
Charlie, we love your fanhood and everything like that. But if you could just skip this app, that'd be great. Charlie's one of our favorite fans. He is 14 years old. So,
of course, as you do. As you do. I'm going first, which probably is the best call because Showgirls. Okay. Let me start off by saying, woof. I had no idea what this movie was all about going into it. I knew that it starred Elizabeth Berkley and that it was widely regarded as a huge flop, but that was about all I knew. Of course, I knew that she was a dancer and it was about, you know, I don't want to say stripper,
but a
dancer.
Yeah, you had to know it was something at least slightly sexy.
I understood. Well, of course I knew that, but I mean, like, for instance, I did not know that my movie was rated NC-17.
Oh!
That's the first time we've covered an NC-17 movie on this show.
Yeah, it is. Damn.
And that's the version I watched this week, was the NC-17 version.
Do they have a rated R version?
Somewhere.
Okay.
Somewhere. I don't know. I don't even want to know where it is.
I can't imagine you going out of your way to seek out a version of this film.
I barely found the one I found. I was like, that's fine with me. So I also knew it had a very saucy movie poster, which in my opinion is one of the best / most iconic movie posters of all time. I'll give it that.
It's a giant leg with a head on it.
Yeah, and like a split up torso. It's just, I mean,
oh,
it's
the torso
very
up
saucy.
There. I thought it was like a really long leg.
No, oh my gosh. You thought it was like the lamp
noodle,
from A Christmas Story.
A big
story.
Noodle person. Yeah, just like that.
Nope, that's Elizabeth Berkley's center of her body with one leg. That's what it is. So let's talk shop real quick, okay? Showgirls hit theaters on September 22nd, 1995. Had a budget of $45 million and drew in $37.8 million at the box office. So if you numbers, that's less than the budget, okay?
How did they spend that much money on this movie?
It wasn't for her.
I'm looking at the people on this list. I haven't heard of like any of these people.
It has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 23, but I also say that a lot of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes were actually quite favorable, which is interesting. I think it's become one of those movies like The Room or something like that that's become a bit of a cult classic because it is so bad. So the cast is as follows. Elizabeth Berkley, whom you may know as Jessica Spano from Saved by the Bell, as the lead character, Nomi Malone. Nomi Malone is her name on the movie.
Nomi?
Kyle Nomi. N-O-M-I. I know. I know me.
Yeah.
Kyle MacLachlan from Twin Peaks. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. As Zach Carey.
Look at you, Kyle MacLachlan.
MacLachlan, Gina Gershon as Crystal Connors.
Gina Gershon, known for her role as Gina Gershon in this film.
And then there's a lot of other people that nobody recognized. And I'm sorry, everybody else. It's just no one knows who you are. It's just sorry.
I'm looking for somebody to be like, hey, like that was my uncle. He played like this character in the film. Like, it's weird that you didn't mention him. He was an extra, but I still think it's kind of cool that he was in it.
Yeah, there were lots of extras in this movie. Guess what? None of them mattered. I'm so sorry. So let's not talk. What I'm trying to do today is not talk so much shop about every single like scene of the movie, but like I'm trying to do big picture stuff. I get a little bit in the weeds, but let's just get into it. Okay. Nomi's character is essentially an aimless, drifting, hitchhiking dancer who's on her way to Las Vegas in order to make it big as a dancer there. So one thing to note is that this actually mirrors Elizabeth Berkley's life in earnest as she grew up dancing, taking ballet and jazz dance and wanted to make it a part of her professional work. So Nomi, her character, after hitching a ride into town with some random dude, gets totally grifted right off the bat by that guy as he steals her suitcase, which is all she had. And then she has her first big blow up of like, so many overacted blowups. Like, you know, when you're like kneading dough and you just need the shit out of it, that's what she did to every scene in which she was like, they're like, you're mad now. And then she would just like blow up and throw a fit and just throw herself around everywhere. It's like, okay.
This is my mad voice.
This is my mad every... She had like crazy eyes the entire film. I don't think her crazy eyes have stopped being so crazy since this film. Sorry, Elizabeth Berkley. So during this blow up scene that I'm talking about, this is actually noteworthy because it's insane. She's like stabbing a cup with a straw. She's like beating up a ketchup bottle and she ends up like chucking fries everywhere to fit, all because of a girl she just met named Molly is asking about where she's from. It's like, you sound super fun. I'm so glad I came over here to talk to you, crazy. Like, just so mean. And so after keeping it kind of fast, after a trip to see an elaborate Vegas performance where she sees a dancer named Crystal Connors, who's played by the absolutely divine, with much too many teeth, Gina Gershon, Nomi decides that, like, this style of dancing is for her. This is what she wants. And so, side note here, the the uncut version of this movie is just one giant 2-hour titty fest. Like, and it starts here. Like, this scene is just where she's like,
go.
Boobs and goes. It's just boobs. Boobs, 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 boobs for 2 hours straight. So many boobs. It was rumored that Elizabeth Berkley, not rumored, she was quoted as saying that, like, she was so naked for 4 months straight that she actually felt uncomfortable being clothed afterwards.
What?
Yeah, she was super, like, it's a lot, dude. So while dancing at a strip club in Vegas, Nomi gets an absolutely insane lap dance to Zach Carey, played by Kyle MacLachlan, who in this film plays Crystal Connor's partner. Okay, like, uh-oh. I think they're together. I think they work together. So, but Crystal paid her $500 so that she could sit in there and watch Nomi give her boyfriend the lap dance. So here comes Elizabeth Berkley, fully nude, all sides nude, with like a banging body for sure, but like she's giving a lap dance to Kyle MacLachlan while Gina Gershon is just watching, okay? And so she gives this insanely intimate lap dance that ends in her like convulsing as if she were having a seizure on the Zach guy, okay? And it's the most bizarre shit you'll ever see. She's like, to be graphic, she's like sitting on him, but her back is like arched towards the floor. And she's like, it's as if take a fish out of water and just hold it up in the air. And that what you think a fish would be flopping around, that's what her torso is doing. Okay. Mm. It's not very sexy, but it's something that's happening. And don't worry, we get another version of it later. So we'll come back to this.
Why,
so why not though? I'm leaving out an entire side story about this situation with this character named James. I don't think it's super critical to the story. I've mostly just skimmed over.
But this lap dance is very important.
This lap dance is very important because I'm here to make fun of this movie. Okay.
Oh, so you're good.
So Crystal then arranges for Nomi to audition for the Chorus Line of Goddess, the show that she stars in herself. And during the tryouts, Nomi gets pissed off when asked to put ice on her nerps to make them stand up. And then she blows up again and storms out of the audition. But because of boobs and the fact that this is a movie, she gets the role anyway and quits the strip club. Okay. Now, side note, we're going to pause because there's a side note. This is a little bit out of order, but this whole situation brings the best line of the movie, in my opinion, okay? And it happens around this time whenever the owner of the Cheetahs strip club that she had been dancing at previously, that she quit in order to take this new role on this Chorus Line, he comes to visit her at the rehearsal for the show. And as he and another woman that worked at the club with him walks away, the owner stops, looks at Nomi and says, oh my gosh, I'm going to say this out loud, must be weird not having anybody come on you. And then he walks away. That's a line from a movie,
right,
that someone filmed, directed, wrote.
And they spent like $40 to $45 million on this film.
Must be weird not having anybody come on you. To say that line. So, like, wow.
This is the weirdest. This is the most, Lisa, like, this is the most insane bridge. They're like, we're not going to make porn. We're going to make damn near porn, but we're going to make it just light enough to the point where it doesn't service you in a positive or engaging, like, script way, or a sexy way, just like right in the middle.
I will say, my husband is a big cinephile, he has gotten me into watching movies lately, which is good because I usually just watch the same shit over and over again. I tried to approach this from like a non-biased perspective. I tried to watch it. It really wasn't the worst. And I think the reason that it wasn't the worst was because everything has, this was 95, is that what I said? This has all cycled back so hard that it felt like you were watching just a movie now, because all the fashion was the same, the hair, the lights, the music, everything's the same. It's like, oh, this is weird now. But whatever the case is, let's speed it up. Long and short of it is that from here, Crystal, Gina Gershon's character, begins to try and humiliate Nomi by having her attend this boat trade show event, which is just like some like thinly veiled ploy that like you dance on a boat and then later you're just like this company's prostitute. And so she gets pissed about that, of course. And let's see, where are we on here? So she gets pissed and she's like, she's going to take revenge on Crystal. And then she begins to, she goes to Zach's house, the house that he shares with Crystal. I'm getting all my names confused because Zach and Crystal, and these are not fun names to say. They go, Nomi goes to Zach's house and she then seduces him by going to swim naked in his pool. And then here's the big, I guess you want to call it climax, the big sex scene of the movie, okay? And this scene, Andy, is the worst thing that my eyes have ever seen. I've seen animals hit by a car. Mm-hmm. I've been to funerals.
Seeing planes hit the Twin Towers.
I've watched the news in the last 3 weeks.
True. Yeah, that too.
but this is the single worst thing my eyes have ever seen. Elizabeth Berkley pulls out this like wild dog convulsive act routine again, which is worse now because they're in the pool this time. And so it's just like water everywhere. You've got the fish out of water thing, but this time she's in it, but she still can't do it. And like she keeps going because she's got her, she's still on him with her hips and her back is arched back, but she's still like slapping in and out of water with her torso and her face. And it's just like, this isn't sexy. Are you okay? Do I need to call? Do you have a medic alert bracelet that I can reference right now?
I'm picturing a salmon that's like been caught like partially, but it's not like out. It's just kind of going in and out of the water, trying to resist being pulled in.
It gets worse again because there's a fountain that's kind of spraying water near where they are. So when she's got her face back, she's already half drowning. But at the same time, the spraying fountain is also spraying in her face. I'm like, did you drown a little bit a few times during the filming of the scene, Elizabeth Berkley? Because like, I would have never enjoyed this at all. Long story short, things get really heated from here between Crystal and Nomi. And Nomi, during a costume change during a show, pushes Crystal down the stairs backstage, which lands Crystal in the hospital and makes Nomi the new like belle of the Vegas ball. Okay. And later at a party, Nomi's friend Molly, the one earlier whom she met whenever she was throwing a fit about fries and ketchup and shit like that, Molly is the only decent person in this whole fucking movie. Okay. And Molly is trying to meet this new musician named Andrew Carver, who's set to be like on the circuit in Vegas soon. He's coming to Vegas. He's going to be at the Stardust. Uh-huh. Okay. And this is where the movie takes a very surprising and not funny turn at all, because there's a scene. Yep. It's not pleasant. All right. And that scene lands Molly, the only good person in this movie, in the hospital. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so at the hospital, Zach tries to make Nomi stay quiet about this, because she's like, we need to call the cops. This Andrew guy and his people just did this to Molly. Like, we need to call the cops. And he's like, nope, we're keeping him safe. And you can't call the cops, because if you do, I know all about this history of yours that you've been trying to keep. Like, she, all throughout the movie, her history is this whole like shrouded thing. Like, she doesn't talk about her family. She says, well, it turns out that he understands now that she's like a runaway prostitute. And she ran away after her parents' murder-suicide. And that she's been arrested a bunch of times for drug possession, prostitution, and assault with a deadly weapon. So it gets gnarly really fast at the end. Like, there's a lot of extravagance and titties and all kinds of stuff for about an hour and 35 minutes. And at the very end of the movie, it's like, oh, here's some, like, actual stuff.
It really felt like they you kind of had, like, an idea of, like, I see how this movie's going. And then they just were like, just because you said that, I'm going to fuck with you and do something insane at the end of this film.
super, super insane. So what ends up happening is that Nomi takes her revenge on Andrew, the guy who did the thing to Molly, by beating his ass in his suite later, like near death. She goes to the hospital and tells Molly that she beat him up and everything's going to be okay. Then she stops by to also say hello to Crystal, who's also in the hospital, and is like, well, I'm just saying goodbye because I fucked up and this is all over for me now. And so Crystal's like, it's okay. What you did to me is something I did to someone else in the past. And then they have this super erotic kiss. And then Nomi leaves Vegas again, hitchhiking a ride out of Dodge with this. And the same dude that brought her into town is this guy who picks her up out of Vegas. And then she like robs him at gunpoint to get her shit back. And that's Showgirls.
Hey, was there any sort of redeeming quality at the end there, like to redeem all the horrible shit that happened, or did I miss that?
No, there's nothing.
There was
nothing.
Not so just
good.
Bad things happen. It's like, well, I guess that's just how life is. Moving on.
I mean, I guess you could say that Nomi defended Molly, and that was kind of redeeming. But that's about it. Like the rest of it was just trash. Because at the end of it, what was the result? She had to leave anyway because she got found out. So trivia. Let's talk now. Again, before
I'm looking at it right now, and I'm so happy.
So before we go to trivia, like I said, there was a whole other plot line about her interactions with this guy named James, who was a bouncer early on in the movie. It's to me, it just did not matter enough to talk about it. It wasn't as critical to the movie as the rest of this. So I apologize if you were like, James, but that wasn't what I was doing tonight. Kyle MacLachlan was rumored to have walked out of the premiere, but he did not, saying, I was there and I suffered for the whole 2 hours. Like, he has released some of the funniest quotes about this, being like, you know, you see the first scene, you're like, it's not so good. And then you're like, well, that was a really bad scene. And then the next one comes, like, the next one's going to be better. And then it's not. And you're like, oh, shit, this is the movie we made. It's really bad. I'm going to butcher his name. I apologize. The director, Paul Verhoeven, I think that's right, is the first director to show up to accept the Razzie for worst director and worst picture.
I was literally okay. Here's the crazy thing, because I'm gonna give a little bit of spoilers. Like we might talk more about the Razzies tonight, but I was literally thinking, I was like, I wonder if anybody ever shows up for a Razzie, and that is an amazing stat that you just provided.
He did it. Thank you, Paul. You did it. The actresses said they only felt uncomfortable on set during the scenes where the monkeys were loose because they stared at their boobs. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a scene where they're all backstage during the dress rehearsal and there are boobs everywhere. And there are also monkeys everywhere. They're just getting loose. And that's a scene in this movie when I believe Elizabeth Berkley holds a monkey while she's topless. Cool. The film was a bomb at the box office, but who would have guessed... made huge money for the home video market.
What? No way.
generating more than $100 million from rentals.
What the fuck? Are you serious?
Yep. It generated more than $100 million.
Oh my God. I thought this was a flop. That fucking crushed it.
But it became one of MGM's top 20 all-time bestsellers. And you know why? Because if you got your hands on the R version of this was way better than anything you could find static-y on, like, Showtime in 1995.
Cinemax.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. If you could get your hands on a copy of this, ooh-wee. You're having yourself a good Friday night. Right after you finish that large stuffed crust pizza by yourself and you sit down and watch Showgirls and your wife goes to bed and you've got Elizabeth Berkley topless holding a monkey, that's a little slice of heaven you can't get back. It's gone.
I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow everybody's mind, just because I'm not going to bring it up in the movie. I'm not going to bring it up when I'm talking about mine, but there was a monkey in mine too. I don't know why. Apparently they're like, well, strip clubs
and monkeys, they go hand in hand. They go tit in hand. Oh boy. There were other trivia, but I feel like I've gone on long enough. This is just Showgirls. I like, honestly, I didn't know going into this. I thought, like, I suggested these two because I was like, sexy movies. Well, wow. But we did it. We covered Showgirls, and now let us never speak of it again.
I will say one stat I was looking at over here. It looks like Showgirls is the highest grossing NC-17 of all time, grossing 20.3 million or something like that.
That's
which
pretty good.
Is pretty good, except like the crazy thing to me is this person who made this movie knew that fact, and yet they still spent $40 to $45 million on the movie.
I don't know where the money went.
They probably were just like, we're going to really break the record this time.
there were a lot of burgers and fries that Elizabeth Berkley's character ate during this film. So I feel like that was probably a cool 10,000 right there. Probably renting the space in Vegas is all the other thing I can think of. But
no, I mean, like, I looked at this. Elizabeth Berkley was only paid $100,000 for this thing.
Yes. So it wasn't to her. I don't know where the money went, you guys. But it wasn't to a quality film. But
way weird.
That's Showgirls.
Thank you.
You at least get to see Demi Moore.
Yeah. I'll say that. Like, I just, you know, Demi Moore is a handsome woman. So.
Oh, she's so beautiful. So. Crazy beautiful.
Striptease. Strip give you a few details here. Striptease is a 1996 American erotic black comedy film written and directed by Andrew Bergman, which, and like, I watched the whole film and I took all the notes on it first, and then I read this parts of a Wikipedia article after the fact, and when they said this is a 1996 American erotic black comedy film,
what?
I like black comedy or like dark, it's like, you know, there's
no,
dark
no,
comedy,
I know what you
black.
Mean, but yeah,
but
yeah,
that I was like, that's news to me. I had no idea I was watching a comedy film this entire time.
Was I supposed to laugh?
I know. Like, anyways, so starring Demi Moore as Aaron, the main character Armand Asante as the detective. He was like one of the guys I didn't know as well. Ving Rhames as Shad. Here's the crazy thing. This happened like 3 years after or 2 years after Pulp Fiction. He looks way younger in this movie, though, than he did as Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction. Apparently you not who know who Ving Rhames is.
I don't. I need to look this up. Okay. Ving Rhames?
Ving. V-I-N-G. Ving,
got it. Who is this? Oh, this guy.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The Eager Beavers had security. That's right. So the strip club's name is the Eager Beavers because fuck it. Robert Patrick as Daryl Grant, her ex-wife and the T-1000.
Okay.
I kept seeing this guy the entire movie, and I was like, why do I know this guy? It's just such a departure for him because he was playing such a drunk, like kind of goofy dude the entire time, but also like a real dick and such a trashy guy. And yet you're used to seeing him as like a cop because you think of Terminator 2 when you play the T-1000. Burt Reynolds.
Of course.
Very old Burt Reynolds as Congressman Dave Dilbeck, and of course some other people. Budget $50 million.
Okay.
Box office $113 million.
People like Demi.
So,
Demi.
So budget kind of seems high for this one, huh? Well, we'll discuss a little bit more about that in trivia.
Okay.
Came out June 28th, 1986, and runs just under 2 hours at an hour and 57 minutes.
You mean 1996. I think I heard 86.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 96. That'd be wild if it was like, just kidding. This movie was from the 80s, and I just didn't mention it to you until just now. So yeah, I ran just under 2 hours, and even that, I'm just like, that was just too long. Like,
it's
just, I just felt very confused. And here's the crazy thing. This got worse Rotten Tomatoes than yours did.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yours was like, you said 26%. This one was 11.
Dude,
11,
that's so bad. 11%
of people thought this was even worth seeing. So just to go over some of the narrative, like I said, this is just like stream of consciousness, like things that I kind of wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh, I just don't remember because I wrote chick because I didn't remember I didn't know what her name was. I didn't remember it. So I just kept writing chick down. And so I had to fill in the name. So Aaron finds out her husband moved away with their daughter, and she has no idea where he is. That's the start of the movie. She's in this courtroom with custody battle or something like that, and apparently he won the custody battle and then just took her, like, super far away. Which, honestly, I will tell you this. This guy is so trashy. It is unfathomable that he was married to Demi Moore in this film.
Let me look this guy up.
At least in this movie. He's a handsome guy otherwise, but just in the movie, he's not. So she needs to get a ton of money to hire an attorney to get her kid back. She said it was like $15,000 or something like that. And so she's been working at this strip joint. She will say repeatedly in the film, and Ving Rhames gets really pissed when anyone calls her a stripper. Cause she says, excuse me. And he's like, she's an exotic dancer. And so, yeah, it's kind of nice that they kind of, one thing I got about this film that I will mention, it's the 90s, so, you know, nothing's going to be, like, super woke or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it did actually, like, have some point to it of kind of, like, I know this is going to sound weird, for the 90s at least, normalizing these, you know, people who are working as exotic dancers and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they would count as sex workers at this time.
No, they're not.
Like,
I was gonna say, I would stop myself. I was like, no, they're not sex workers. Just exotic
entertainment.
Dancers.
I don't know, whatever you call it. Yeah.
So it was nice that they, like I said, they're like, because the best people in the movie, the best human beings in the movie, were all the exotic dancers, of course. Everybody else were real pieces of shit. So she's a dope strip. She's a dope exotic dancer, and people love her. In fact, she's considered the best one at the club. Minor narrative about the main conflict of the story. Like, this is as I'm going on. So, like, they just show this super long strip dance of, like, of her and then somebody else doing it. And just, like, probably, like 8 minutes straight of that. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, something about the main narrative. But you don't feel like you really learned anything about it. And they're like, all right, let's get back to the dancing. And they go back and there's, like, another 10 minutes of dancing. Like, they just... they find a way to make it seem like it's organic, but it's not. Like, they just think about this. Like, you would think, like, when they're making cuts, they would be like, okay, we have to cut something. And so every time they'd be like, we need to cut a scene that's explaining what the fuck is happening in the movie, not the 5 minute dance we just watched on the catwalk.
Yeah, don't take that out. No, sir, no, sir.
So, like, it was kind of hard to follow a lot of the time. Like, I know the general gist of the movie, and I'll go over that, but it's just, it's amazing where they're just like, so this time it was finally with the naked boobs, but they were obviously much more minor in this one than they were in Yours. Like, they had some nudity and stuff like that, but largely it was just breasts and not, like, a lot.
Mine was a whole thing.
Nonstop, everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, post-Marcellus Wallace Ving Rhames, shocking, looks much younger than he did in Pulp Fiction. I already mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Backstage hijinks with other strippers and the boss. Oh, golly, they get into silly shenanigans. That's what I wrote down. Because it's just like, they're just like, oh, look how fun and how silly they are and how much they love goofing each other and everything.
Yep.
So they kind of, like, you explore a little bit about some of the different people that go, are, like, frequenters and, like, regulars at the bar. And there's this one really super shy guy who clearly is, like, a sub or something like that. He's submissive or something because he, like, keeps saying that he, like, worships her and, like, she's his goddess or something like that. And again, no kink shames here. We're sex positive. I shouldn't say that for Lisa, but I'm assuming she is. I am, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah. So he wants to help her because he found out from somebody that she's having this, basically trying to do this lawsuit to get her kids back. And he is, like, super shy, but he's like, I'll do anything. He's like, I know his congressman and I know some dirt on him. And she's like, no, don't do that, please. You don't need to do anything. It's fine. But he, guess what? He tries to do it.
He does it
so
anyway.
So he calls this senator or conservative, representative of congressman, just a congressman. We'll just put it that way.
Okay.
And I guess threatens him. And so they're like, well, we're going to have to murder that guy now. So that guy's dead.
Obviously.
So, like, you know, so and then Burt Reynolds is the senator. And so this guy ends up being found in a pond, in a lake, later. So they do that. And then that's like a 30-second scene that they address. And then they do another 4 minutes of stripping. Just clearly, it's just like they just come back and they're like, then there's this part where, like, afterwards, after the guy died and was found, this detective meets at the club and is talking to Aaron about the death and everything like that. And she's like, oh, fuck. So she doesn't know exactly what happened, but has a feeling this could be something to do with the fact that, you know, that guy was trying to blackmail someone, basically. So she's telling the detective everything she knows. And as she starts telling him that, she's like, he's like, oh, wait. And then they look over at the stage and somebody walks on, and then we watch another 4 minute sequence of somebody else. like this is in the middle of a conversation about a very important plot point, and they're just like, no, I got to watch the show real quick and then we'll get back to this.
Oh, my gosh.
So then all of a sudden we cut for no reason at all to the main chick, to Aaron at her house dancing to bad music post shower, wrapped in a towel and slowly taking it off in front of the mirror because she's like, man, look at how good I look.
She did look good.
Yeah, she's getting dressed, doing a solo strip tease for herself, party of one, in the mirror with her blow dryer.
Is she naked at this point? Is she naked at any point?
She, like I said, it's mainly just like she'll, like, show some boobs or something like that, but you don't see, like, it's not like constantly like anything more than that. She never gets completely naked, no.
Okay. Got it. Noted.
So, yeah. So we keep going. So the big thing is we kind of go into Burt Reynolds, which I guess he's kind of the comic thing or something like that. But he's like, he's so creepy, it's weird to think that he's supposed to be comic relief because he's just such an offensive and terrible person.
Right.
And like his aides and everything like that keep him like, you can't keep going to strip clubs, dude. No more women until election day. Like, you can't fuck this up. Because clearly he's like a conservative or whatever and is like talking about like family first and all that shit. Mm-hmm. And so, but now obviously he's obsessed with this chick, with Erin, who is, I guess he says he's in love with her. Because he watched her dance and now he's in love.
I mean, takes less for some, so yeah.
Yeah. I will tell you, it was one exchange that just made me laugh. It was actually funny. It was like, Ving Rhames, I guess something had happened to one of the dancers, like, Python had died, and they didn't want her to know that it had died, so they're like, so the boss is like, fuck, just take the money and go get another Python at the store or whatever. And she's like, he's like, what do you think is open at 10 p.m.? What fuckers are selling? Yeah, go buy the Rite Aid and buy a fucking snake. And he's like, and then he says, there's an all-night snake farm just up the road from here. And I just said, what? No, there isn't. You cannot just say stuff like that because it fits this thing. Like, you just made a joke about how absurd it would be for that to be, and then you actually made it a thing. Like, what?
There's an all-night snake farm?
Just how do you have enough reason for snakes to know that fact?
Didn't Walmart used to sell snakes?
Not pythons, not full-form pythons.
Not pythons. There's a Walmart up the road that has like three or four garden snakes you could probably fashion into one python.
Yeah. So apparently, yeah, they just had pythons up the road at the snake farm.
Sure.
So,
sure.
All right. I got to calm down. Sorry.
So no, it's so good.
So they're, so in addition to trying to get the kid back, she is now working as like a sting operation to try and get, you know, basically she's like stripping for the congressman and everything like that, trying to get him to stay stuff on recording, to try and pin him for the murders and everything, because the police obviously think he did something. And then this guy who was like a senior advisor of the senator basically says, gives this really dark speech explaining that he'll make sure she gets custody, but only if she tells the popo to fuck off, which she promptly doesn't. It's just, and then here's what I'm going to like kind of go, this, the ending of the movie is where we're going to cut to.
Okay.
Because basically all this time, there's all that, plus her ex-husband, who is just the worst. He's drunk. Every time you see him, he's just hammered out of his mind, and like borderline passing out, and yet he still is very dangerous. So, because he's basically trying to steal his daughter back and trying to punish her for, I guess, wanting to be her mom. So
okay. So how dare you want to mother your child?
It's weird. So the end of this movie is fucking insane. So all plots mold into one. Some folks have, so some of the guys, okay, the people who are the aides of the senator have her at gunpoint. They're like in some underground like construction zone, I guess.
What?
Don't know. You don't need, well, listen, we're going to, it's going to get worse before it gets better. All right. Ving Rhames. So these guys all have guns on her and the senator because they're like, you know what? This senator's nothing but fucking trouble. Let's just kill both of them and get out of here. And then Ving Rhames shows up. He's like, I would say like 100 feet away from these three guys that all have guns pointed at him. And none of them shoot him as he just runs at them from a very long distance and then just tackles two of them. And then one of the guys who's still standing there with a gun in his hand still doesn't shoot him. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the detective that was working with her shows up and shoots him in the gun and knocks the gun out of his hand.
What?
Like, why? You could have just had him shot anywhere, but you just had to have it be right in the gun. Like, you've already made all these nude scenes. No one's going to care if you shoot a dude in the hand.
This is, excuse me, this movie is all about respecting bodies and no gore and nothing too graphic. But here's some Demi Moore.
No violence, but we are going to give you a lot of boobs. So there were a lot of different random jokes in this time. And I didn't really, I'm not going to list like any of them, but they were just really, really bad. And it made no sense in these scenes. They were very tense. And they were just like also just kind of making these jokes like offhanded for no reason. What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's the black comedy aspect of it. Just random just jokes in the middle of like a standoff. Yeah.
Then The ex-husband shows up. Everybody, like, bear in mind, this is a, like, an underground, like, I'm like, how the fuck did these people know to get here? Like, it's just so many people showed up in the same place that seems so off the beaten path. Yeah. He shows up, and he's super drunk and just is, like, pissed. And so he just, I don't know if he was, like, falling over or something, but he ended up falling and hitting this lever. And the lever, suddenly, like, 2 tons of salt fall on... the three guys that were trying to kill them earlier.
And not my instant salt.
So now they're just covered in like these huge chunks of salt, like, you know, like the kinds you throw on like sidewalks or whatever, but just buried in it.
Awesome.
And so drunk guy accidentally saves the day.
Yay. Thanks, drunk guy.
So the senator thinks like, man, we all did it. We're all out of this together. And then he walks out. I'm sorry. Before that happens...
There we go.
The two of the other dancers that work with her and her daughter all come running into the cave as well.
Sure. Everybody, this place is banging.
This place is fucking hopping.
How are you not going to be at the all-night snake farm and the underground construction cave?
And the salt cave.
The most happening places. Do you remember where this was set? Like what the setting was?
Did they ever give a town name?
So it wasn't like a big city or anything. It was just like, we're just stripping somewhere and there's a salt cave and a snake farm and you're invited. Come one, come all.
It's
got to
be Florida or something.
Cave. Feels like it. Shit.
Okay. So all that happens and then he runs out and he's like, man, I'm free. And then there's like, the news crew, like, as they're getting ready to leave, the news crew shows up.
Cool.
They also show up to this same place. They knew, too, apparently. Everybody fucking knew about this place. So they're like, whoa. And they see the senator is in his underwear, and they're like, that's what's scary about this. And then they see all the guys covered in salt, and they're like, I don't know what that means, but that probably also is a story. Wow. And then they arrest the senator, and she gets her kid. There's still some unspoken sexual tension between her and the detective she's been working with all along, and that's the end of the movie.
What, does she not do one last like dance on the salt pile?
That would be great if she did like a post like kill and in a video game dance over their body, but no, she did not.
She did not. Wow, that's jeez, holy shit, striptease! I think I know what I'm watching tonight.
Yeah, you want to get some trivia?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so similar. Apparently, it didn't have quite the accolades that yours did, but it did get win quite a few awards.
Okay.
Including nominee for worst picture of the decade.
Whoa, the decade?
Yeah, it didn't win that, fortunately, but it was nominated. Nominee for worst supporting actor of 1997, Burt Reynolds. So those are the two that they were nominated for. The ones that they won. won worst picture of the year. Worst actress, Demi Moore. Worst screen couple, Burt Reynolds and Demi Moore. Worst director, Andrew Bergman. Worst screenplay, Andrew Bergman. And worst original song for the song, Pussy, 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 Whose Kitty Are You?
Oh my gosh. Excuse me?
Yeah, and it also crushed at the Stinker's Bad Movie Awards.
Sorry, Demi. So your boobs deserve
won the worst
better than
picture,
that.
Worst picture of that as well.
Oh, man.
So, just a couple pieces of trivia. I mainly wanted to read those, but Burt Reynolds was not actually picked for this part. Like, they, like, interviewed a lot of different people, or, like, had other people, like, apply for it. What the fuck is the term?
Audition.
Thank you. Yeah. For the part of Dave Dilbeck. Reynolds just wanted this part so bad. He and his agent contacted Castle Rock Studio and were like, we need to be in this fucking movie. So they flew him out to Miami, Florida to audition. And he even took a pay cut lower than what he'd received during, like super low, just to be in this movie. I have no idea if he just wanted to see Demi Moore's boobs or if he really thought this movie was going to crush.
I mean, I've seen pictures since we've been talking of her, like, in her dance everything. And she looks hot as shit, so I would have auditioned for it too. Shit.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, Demi Moore made bank. So when I mentioned earlier the $50 million thing, kind of made a little sense. She was paid $12.5 million for this movie.
Elizabeth,
just
Buckley
a hair over
$100,000.
She was the highest paid actress at the time for that film. nobody had ever been paid that much as a female lead or whatever. It makes sense though, because they're like, hey, you're going to be like, this is like a really big movie and you're going to be showing your titties a lot. So like, we think we should reward you, but other chick, no, you fuck you. You get 100K.
Yeah.
So, underwent last minute editing because the test audiences were laughing at parts that weren't supposed to be funny.
Oh.
I love the thought of like when they say last minute of it being like literally like in 2 weeks, them having to just correct some shit to make it so that those parts aren't funny anymore.
Yeah. Oh, ouch.
They did ask. They invited Michael Caine, Gene Hackman, and Donald Sutherland for the role of David Dillbeck, and weirdly, they turned it down.
Weird.
So
weird.
That's striptease.
That's striptease. I cannot believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Demi Moore.
Jeez. Yeah, I couldn't. The entire time I was saying her name, I didn't feel confident once. That's the way that
I don't
said
know.
It.
I don't know if it's Demi or Demi. I think it's Demi. I think you got it right the first time. But whatever the case is, she's out of the spotlight. Oof. She's doing the thing where she's gorgeous forever for an eternity. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about her. She's fine, guys. That was this week's very special noise episode.
Yeah,
69.
Noise.
Of 90s Court. You're going to need to vote on this one. We're going to need to know where your
allegiances lie.
Yeah, this is a rough one, I think. But listen, nice. That's what she said. If you want to find us and if you want to vote, we are on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court. We are on Instagram at 90s.court. Voting there happens in the stories feature. So if you want to vote on Instagram as well, just to get 3 votes in, because this is not the Electoral College, you do mm-hmm. what you want to do. 90s.court on Instagram. Of course, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/90scourt where you can go support the show. We would love to have you on. We have some nice special content over there. And as always, leave us a nice 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to us, especially on iTunes. I think that's where most people listen. But
yeah, it's just mainly most of the places don't give you the opportunity to review on the other podcast platforms.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then iTunes Weirdos. Only, please.
Weirdos.
So that's our show. That's episode 69. And
69.
Oh boy. Thank you guys for tuning in.
This has been, I just want everyone to know, this has been the worst. Thank you for listening. We love you. Thank you.
Yeah. We did it. Yeah. This has been pretty bad. Thank you for sticking it out with us. That's what she said. Okay. We'll be back next week with episode 70.
Okay. Bye. Stay rad.
Bye.